It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me. Going to start off today with a little bit of where I left off last week, and that is a quick discussion about what's taking place in our nation's capital, where I spent most of the week around conservation issues and ag issues. And so I'll share some of those insights, and I might as well do it right now. There's an awful lot being written because I think there's a lot of, frankly, lack of understanding as to what the direction is going to be for conservation under this administration. And I had the pleasures of meeting with the senior leadership of both the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture, as well as many people involved on the periphery. And I think what's happening, so when you read all these stories about the sky is falling and things are terrible, I think what's happening, quite frankly, is a challenging of the status quo. And having been doing this for a long time, when we're talking about the amount of money we are talking about, billions and billions of dollars of federal expenditures, there's always room for improvement. So I don't think this is a case at all of jettisoning long-term, very popular programs when it comes to conservation and agriculture. I think rather it's a situation of trying to find both program efficiencies and economic efficiencies, and in particular, reducing duplication of efforts. So take what's taking place right now with the Forest Service and Department of Agriculture and the Interior Department, and think about fires, which, of course, we all read about, and when they happen, they're terrible. Well, the number of federal agencies that are involved in managing fires is quite large. There's really no centralization. There's no efficiency. There's no one go-to place. So one of the things that's being talked about is moving and having firefighting take place under a centralized agency where it makes the most sense. It would save money. It would be much more efficient in fighting fires, and you wouldn't have conflicting opinions. You wouldn't have the Forest Service saying one thing and the Bureau of Land Management saying the other, and they're both fighting the same fire. So those are the kind of things that are taking place. I personally think it's long overdue. Another big discussion, and really a third rail for some, is Land and Water Conservation Fund, of which I personally have been a big supporter of for a long time. I've helped develop some of the regulations that take place for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. We're talking about a $900 million a year fund. And within any expenditure of $900 million, there's going to be ways to improve it. There are going to be ways to not have it be so wasteful. So that seems to me to be much more the discussion than we're not going to have the Land and Water Conservation Fund, because that's not going to happen. The other thing that is happening with the Land and Water Conservation Fund is this administration, very much believes in local control. It does not think that the federal government should buy land in a state. Illinois, of course, we have very little federal land. Wisconsin's got a lot of federal land. And no matter where you're listening, particularly if you're west of the Mississippi, you have a lot of federal land. It does not think that federal land should be accumulated without the approval of local interests. And I think that all goes back to the idea of more local control. And one of the projects that certainly was in the headlights, if you will, not under the Land and Water Conservation Fund, but under talking about this, was this huge wind farm development that was going to be done in Idaho, one of the biggest in the world. And the entire Idaho delegation, in fact, I think the overwhelming majority of people in Idaho opposed it. And yet the previous administration at the very end authorized all the go-to permits for it to go forward. And that set off a firestorm because the local community was not involved. Well, the current administration rescinded all those orders, and now the Lava Ridge wind farm is not going to be built. So when you come to the Land and Water Conservation Act, which is funded with the revenues from offshore oil and gas revenues, it's been in existence for a very long time. It is the major funding vehicle for all kinds of public programs, whether it be boat ramps, whether it be community parks, whether it be land acquisition for providing trails, whether it be for adding to national wildlife refuges, et cetera. It is the mechanism through which public lands are managed and funded and acquired. It's the primary mechanism. And what's happening here is they're saying, let's be more efficient. One of the ideas being floated, which is, I think, a terrific idea, is that not-for-profit organizations, say Ducks Unlimited or the Nature Conservancy, et cetera, or your local land trust, should be able to apply for land and water conservation funds on a matching basis. This would add a lot of money to it. It would also put the execution of a lot of these programs in the hands of organizations that actually are very good at delivering things on the ground. So the one thing I came away with from my several days in Washington is, yes, things are going to be very different, and the status quo is not accepted any longer. And I think that's a good thing. We're not making revolutionary changes that I can see so far in conservation. If we were, I certainly would let you know. I think what we're seeing is, let's see how we can do things more efficiently. And I was reminded a couple of years ago from an individual who runs a big company, and he said, I asked my managers every quarter, find $1 million in savings. When was the last time the federal government was asked to find $1 million, much less $10 million or $100 million in savings in these arenas? It can do it. It needs to be challenged to do it, and we as taxpayers and beneficiaries of all of this government largesse, which is our money, would be much better served. So hopefully, much of the rhetoric around the Land and Water Conservation Fund turns to, let's make it a better program. Let's bring it really current. We're going to have $900 million to spend. Let's spend it the best way we can, and there's a lot of waste in that, a lot of just, frankly, people at the government trough because they've been there for a long time. Let's see if we can eliminate that and make it a highly efficient program. The same thing, to some extent, is going on with the Federal Duck Stamp Program, which is near and dear to my heart and many of you listening. It has been the most successful program for securing wetland habitat ever. And yet it is not perfect. It can be improved. And one of the things I see is that outreach is now being made to organizations like Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, California Waterfowl Association, and others as to how to make it more efficient. Efficiency is what is driving the discussion right now in Washington. There's going to be less money to go around, so we better spend it more efficiently. It is not an ideology that says conservation is bad. And those who are furthering that belief are simply trying to raise money. And I won't get on a soapbox this morning on that before I take a break, except to say conservation groups, by and large, cannot raise money unless they have an issue against which to raise it. They don't raise money. And that's true of, I mean, look at all the ads you get, all the solicitations, it's always around an issue. So if the Sierra Club and Defenders of Wildlife and organizations like that can find a wedge issue to raise money, they're going to. And what they're doing right now is saying the sky is falling. Everything we believe in is under threat. You need to support us so we can fight these terrible things that are going to happen. I don't think terrible things are going to happen. I think the terrible thing that's happening is that these organizations are being disingenuous, and they are trying to raise money from people who are believing the right thing should be done. They're unsuspecting. They're not as knowledgeable as these organizations probably should make them. And so the Sierra Clubs and all the litigating organizations that don't agree with anything about what's taking place are trying to raise money to stop it. They haven't peeled back the onion to say, is there some good here? There's a lot of good here. At least that's what I think. And after spending several days in Washington talking to people who actually are making the decisions, I think we're headed in the right direction. We are going to get more efficiencies. That doesn't mean there won't be some controversial decisions made. But by and large, I think our taxpayer monies in conservation are going to be spent more wisely. And that'll be a good thing. When I come back from the break, I'm going to talk about this discussion of not eating birds or ducks in particular around Green Bay in Wisconsin and what that means. It's a bizarre situation. And so when I come back, I'll talk about that. I'm also going to talk, if I can, a little bit about the situation and the migration so far, which seems to be totally stalled. We're enjoying beautiful summer weather. And then maybe a peek at what's going to be coming up next week when I make my sojourn, which I've made for over four decades now, to northern Manitoba. I'll be back in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northern Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Hope you're enjoying the show and thank you for joining me. Headline, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources warns hunters not to eat mallard shot in Green Bay. But what happens when contaminated ducks migrate? This is, in a way, it's bizarre. There's not a lot of logic here, but I'm going to tell you what the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is saying, and then you can make up your mind whether it makes any sense or not. So they have issued two advisories that forever chemicals are contaminating fish and game meat. Now, these chemicals have been in the soils and in the water for a long time. Doesn't mean they're good. It just means they've been there a long time. The DNR issued a do not eat consumption advisory for all fish species caught in the Moen Chain of Lakes in the northern part of the state. And the department also issued an advisory to hunters only to consume venison once a month from deer that were harvested within a 5-mile area of the Moen Lakes. Moreover, they issue an advisory not to eat mallards shot in southern Green Bay and to only eat wood ducks and mallards harvested throughout the rest of the bay once per month. Who makes up these things? On what basis are we saying only once a month or do not eat? And by the way, birds have wings and the mallards and wood ducks around Green Bay are going to be in Illinois, and they're going to be in Mississippi and Louisiana, and they're going to probably be over in Nebraska. I don't understand quite what they're trying to accomplish, but they said that the substances that are being found in these birds, polyfluoroalkyl is the number one that they're describing, and a wide array of manufacturing projects are toxic to human health. Well, this is not new. I don't think these chemicals, which of course we're not happy with being in the water, are just arrived there now. I think they've probably been there a long time. They say it increases the risk of cancer and the lower infant mortality rates, the birth rates, and they are asking hunters not to eat mallards in Green Bay. Well, what about the mallard that just flew from Manitoba to Green Bay and arrived and lands in your decoys? It hasn't had a drop of water yet to drink in Green Bay, or maybe it's come from a marsh nearby and come over to Green Bay for the first time. So I think the DNR is out on a limb here. And they haven't handled it probably the best way, because these are migratory birds. Here today, gone tomorrow, maybe back next week. They move all over the place. We now know this. I mean, we used to think when a mallard duck or a pintail left, let's just say Green Bay, and it flew south, you didn't see it again till next spring or the following fall. That's not the case at all. It could fly down to central Illinois and 2 days later be right back at Green Bay. All it's doing is bouncing around with the currents of the fall migration winds. South wind, they go north. North wind, they go south. We didn't know this happened, but it does happen until eventually they have to keep going south because of freeze. So there's a lot of question in this as to how this is going to work out. But the DNR saying eat one mallard per month, one wood duck per week, and then they say, do not eat a mallard at all. So in the zone closest to Green Bay, if you think of a map of Green Bay, and for those of you who've never been there, just go to Google Earth and you'll see what I'm talking about. They are advising the entirety of Green Bay, from the town of Green Bay all the way out into the lake, that this advisory takes place. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think it's going to stop hunters from hunting. And if you're sitting in Arkansas this morning, as some of you are listening to me, you're probably wondering, well, how does this affect me? I guess the answer is these birds are carrying contaminants in them that they picked up in Green Bay, and wherever they go, they're going to have these contaminants in them. So I don't really know what to advise you. Certainly the Department of Natural Resources or Game and Fish in Arkansas isn't issuing advisory not to eat mallards, because how would you know the duck came from Green Bay? So I think this is one of those things where maybe a state got out ahead of things without thinking of the consequences, and there are consequences to the economy, to hunting traditions, etc. And then the idea of not to eat deer meat in certain counties or certain areas of the state where this is present, it has far-reaching consequences. So I'm not sure what the outcome will be, but I think ultimately it's a bad idea to issue these kinds of advisories unless you have a strategy that makes sense, and there's no strategy here that seems to work. So moving on from there for a second, it's been really warm, which has been really delightful. And that means we have had one of the most delayed migrations, starts to a migration that certainly I can recall, and probably many of you can recall. The teal season in Illinois and most states was pretty much a bust. Why? Because it was set too early. The first week in September is always too early. But on top of that, there has still not been a frost across many areas of northern Saskatchewan and northern Manitoba. And here we are well past now the middle of September, and we have not had a frost. Some decades ago, I was in the Pas on the 12th, which is way up in northern Manitoba, where I'll be in 10 days, on the 12th of September, and we had a blizzard, 3 feet of snow. We were snowed into a cabin with no running water, no heat, no plumbing for 3 days, because you couldn't see the 100 yards to the farmhouse to get there. If you tried to walk it, you wouldn't have made it. You would have been lost in the blizzard. So here we are decades later, and we got 80 degrees and people sunbathing instead of hunting in the northern latitude. So it is a very mild start to the fall. It's very, very dry, as we know. Fall colors will be impacted by that. They always are in dry years. The Canadian prairies, where I'm headed next week for a firsthand view, are as dry as they've been in maybe our lifetime. That's not good news. I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. And I'll be back next Sunday morning from the North Great. Well, actually, it's beyond the Northwoods, the boreal forests of northern Manitoba. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.